This is Apologetics Live with Matt Slick and Andrew Rappaport, part of the Christian podcast community.
All right, the echo is gone. I have no idea what that was. It was weird, but we'll start over. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm fine. Hanging in there.
Technology is great when it works, isn't it? Well, let's just pick up from here, Matt, where we were going to. Now that I had to close down all those windows, I had all my windows open to Carm on some new articles that you put out and on slavery. So we could either do that. I could go through the slavery questions at first, or do you want to go through this Calvinist song that we had?
It might be fun for this Calvinist song, and then we can, while people are getting in here, and then we can talk about the slavery thing.
Okay, this song is...
Okay. Well, let me share this so people can watch and can see. There's not much on this, but... Yeah, at least people would be able to see this. So here is the Calvinists Are Not Saved cover song, and I'll stop this where he just has long periods of just music. I'll let Matt respond at each of these spots. So this will be fun for you.
Okay, this song is entitled Calvinists Are Not Saved. Here goes. Standing in line on Judgment Day, waiting for the God of Calvinism to say that I did a good job. But then the real Jesus hurries by and stares at me like I'm an unsaved guy. Then he damned my soul to hell, because Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are reprobates, and some things will never change. Calvinists are not saved, it's the way it is. Calvinists are a bunch of stupid idiots, and no, I don't believe that they're saved.
Okay, let's pause right there, that first part there, Matt. So, what are your thoughts?
Well... when people tell me, I've had people tell me before that Calvinists are not saved, and then I just say, okay, show me in the Bible backing for that. Why those of us who believe that that people are touched by sin in every part of what they are can't be saved, or that we teach that the sinful person can't come to Christ on his own, but has to be granted faith, Philippians 1:29, granted to come to Christ, John 6:65, why are we not saved for that? Or that we believe that God unconditionally elects people, doesn't look into the hearts of anybody to see what good quality they have, and elects them based on God's sovereign choice, Ephesians 1:11, not what's in people. Otherwise, that would be favoritism, which is condemned in James 2:2 through 4. Or if we teach that Jesus canceled the sin debt at the cross, not of everybody, but only those who are the elect, Colossians 2:14, but why are we going to hell? Or irresistible grace, you know, that God, at the point of regeneration, not that grace can't be resisted, but at only irresistible grace means that at the point of regeneration that we can't successfully resist God's will in that, where we will be regenerated. That's John 3:3 through 5, 2 Corinthians 5:17. Why is that wrong? A perseverance of the saints, which Jesus says he will lose none, John 6:37 through 40. Why are we going to hell for that? I mean, that's what I ask people. Ask them, give me the scriptures. Why are we going to hell for things like that?
Well, that's what's going to be lacking in this whole thing is scripture, but a lot of claims. He made the claim we're not, that Calvinists are not saved. He made the claim that they're reprobate. But one of the things, and especially in his next section, I'll play the next 30 seconds, is this language we would expect to hear from a Christian, someone that professes to be saved? Listen to this next section.
Hey there, stupid Calvinists. You can't go where the others go, because you guys are not saved like they are. You trusted in your tulip instead of Jesus Christ. Now you get to burn in hell forevermore. Because Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are reprobates, and some things will never change. Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are a bunch of stupid idiots. No, I don't believe that they're saved.
Okay, so Calvinists are just a bunch of stupid idiots. Is that language we would expect to hear from someone that's professing to be a Christian?
No, well, you know, there are a lot of deceived people out there, and Christians who can walk in varying levels of failure in their sanctification and humility before God. And that, to me, is an example of such a person. You know, I'd like to have a dialogue with someone like that. I think it'd be interesting to see if he could back up his claims. I'm looking, it reminded me, so I did a search on the web for that song and found it and found some other stuff too. And I'm looking at the anti-Calvinist logic and rhetoric on one particular site. And it's pretty typical of this individual and others like what you've played, that they don't know what they're criticizing. I find that to be the case almost all the time. They don't understand what we teach. They misrepresent it and misrepresent scripture in the process. I mean, they're not interested in having a serious dialogue. They're only interested in, apparently, condemnation, mockery, and things like that.
Well, that's what this smacks of.
Say in Colossians 4, 5, and 6, this is something that these people like that should pay attention to. It says, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders, because he would say, we were an outsider, we're not a Christian. Making the most of the opportunity, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, so you know how you should respond to each person. He's obviously not doing that, being mocking, condescending, insulting. This is what we get from atheists and Muslims. And so when they join ranks with that approach, they're joining ranks with the accuser, who spreads lies and misrepresentation. So, you know, I would just urge people like that to, you know, if you want to debate me, talk with me about it, that's what I'd like. Just talk to me about it. It'd be great.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that you're a Calvinist. You have a website, Calvinist Corner. Do you worship, or I forget how he worded it, do you hold on to tulip?
Not Jesus.
Yeah. So is that descriptive of a Calvinist?
No, we don't put our faith in tulip. Put our faith in Jesus. You know, but like I said, you know, people who say these kind of things are incredibly ignorant. They don't even, and they're not even teachable. Well, I found many such people have no patience to be taught, to be corrected. They are the ones who are right, and they're the ones who will condemn everybody. And it's, you know, it's very sad.
All right, let's play the last 30 seconds of it.
Calvinists are not saved. Now, I gave the gospel to a Calvinist the other day. He rejected it and said he would go his own way. He called it easy believism and said he wasn't saved. I said, no, duh, you stupid Calvinist, I already knew that. Because Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are reprobates, and some things will never change. Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are a bunch of stupid idiots, and I don't believe that they're saved. Thank you, and we are off.
All right, so That was Andrew from Down Under wanted us to respond to that. I think the response is, that's not very Christian-like mannerisms, behavior, or speech. It's not even descriptive of what Calvinists would believe.
No.
And, I mean, a complete misrepresentation, but the vitriol is what would concern me.
Yeah, it's bad news. It's not something I've not come across before. I have. You know, it's just ignorance on their part.
Yeah.
I don't know theology. Yeah.
So on CARM, I'm going to try to see if I can get there to some new articles. You've released a couple new articles I want to start discussing, because you released several articles on slavery. And... Mm-hmm. trying to maneuver. I had them all up nicely and all ready to ask you some questions. The first one I remember that I wanted to ask is, what is slavery? You had an article on that, so.
Yeah, slavery is different kinds of slavery. A lot of times what people do is when they think of slavery, they think of the chattel slavery of the United States, Western Europe in the past few hundred years. Chattel slavery is when a slave, a person, is owned by another person, and that person who is owned does not have any rights at all. Can be beaten. There's no punishment for that. There's no consequence for that. And that's chattel slavery, and that's not the slavery of the Bible, not even close. The slavery of the Bible is unfortunate in it's existing because of the sin of people in the world, just like murder exists, and rape and lying, and slavery does. And what God did was he permitted slavery to occur, as he permits all kinds of things to occur. And he gave restrictions and warnings to people about the nature of slavery, the extent of slavery. Now, there are several words for slavery that are translated from the Hebrew into the English as slave, and none of them have direct correspondence to the terms that we would use in slavery context in the English. And that's one of the unfortunate things. So, nevertheless, the kinds of slavery that exist in the Old Testament are basically indentured servitude slavery, slavery by capture of war. And a lot of times people become slaves. Well, those are the main two categories, mainly. So what we find is that the slaves had a lot of rights, and so I wrote on that as well. But a slave was not to be. We can go to different verses, different issues. One of the things that's really interesting, I don't have all the verses memorized, but slaves that escaped their masters were not to be returned, and there's a verse that says that. There we go. I found it. That's Deuteronomy 23:15-16. A slave that escaped his master was not to be returned, but property was to be returned. Leviticus 25:46, 21:32 out of Exodus. So they were considered a form of property, but not by their soul or their physical body, but more by the ability of them to work, and that the work was considered property. There's verses, I think it's Leviticus 25:46. No, it's not. It's you know, let me get to it. It's Exodus 21 and verses 20 and 21. It says, if a man strikes his male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hand, he shall be punished. If, however, he survives a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken, for he is his property. But the word property there it actually means silver or money in the Hebrew. And so that's what it's talking about here, is the idea that it's his money. This is a foreign concept to us, where a person was considered, you know, he had to work for 5 years or 20 years, that was a monetary equivalent. And that it says, if he dies, the master loses the monetary equivalent of work. And so that can be sold and transferred to others. And so when it says he is his property, what it really is saying is it's his money. And so they were not property in that strict sense, since direct property, strict property was to be returned, but slaves were not to be returned. So there's this balance between them. It's kind of hard to explain. But the more you study it, the more you see that's the case in Scripture. I got a lot more I could say, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I like you had eight different things at discussing slavery in the Bible on the article that you had on what is slavery. And this contradicts what people think of as slavery in America, because in America we think of the kidnap people, which is, by the way, in the Scriptures, something that you can't do. So the Bible would never have endorsed the African slave trade, just right on that alone. The African slave trade, and even in Rome, they would argue that it is that people were property. You already addressed that, but you have eight things about slavery in the Bible. When a slave was freed, he was to receive gifts that enabled him to survive economically in Deuteronomy 15. That flies in the face of what people would think of slavery. Because this is the challenge. We always hear this, that the Bible accepts slavery. Actually, here's someone right now saying slavery is inexcusable. I hope that they would come go to apologeticslive.com, join us, and let's discuss that. Because I'd love to see what folks think about that and actually engage with us. Number two you have here is that the slave was required to participate in religious observances. A master who punished his slave and then died was punished himself, which if he's property, if he was property, master wouldn't suffer any consequence of that. Number four, you say that you have a slave was a member of the master's household, Leviticus 22. Slave was required to rest on the Sabbath, so he's supposed to honor the Sabbath. A person can sell himself into slavery. That's something that people don't realize. This was an economic system. An escaped slave was not to be returned as if they were property. This is Deuteronomy 23, which is very interesting in that context. And I think it's Deuteronomy 22. It talks about if a cattle is found, you're to return it. But if a slave, you don't return him, making it clear that he's not property. And then the eighth one you have on your article is a slave could become free after 6 years of service. In the year of the Jubilee, the marriage of the master's son, the marriage of the master's son or refused to marriage would then be set free due to injury, and then purchasing his own freedom. Now, that's interesting. The last one's interesting, purchasing his own freedom, because they'd say, well, they don't have any money. However, in Scripture, slaves would get a half day's wage. So it's not the indentured servitude that so many people think it is or claim that it is.
Right. Yep.
So that was one article you had.
If you kidnap someone and made him a slave, that was punishable by death. And in chattel slavery, that's what happened with the slaves from Africa. They were kidnapped. But biblically, kidnapping someone, Deuteronomy 24:7, that was punishable by death.
Yes.
Yeah.
And John is saying Tyler Villa wrote a whole series on this topic on Freethinker blog, and he did. He has three excellent articles, goes into detail on these. I recommend folks to go out there and check that out. But on Carm, you have another one. What does the Bible approve slavery? So with this article, Matt, this is really where people challenge us, right? They challenge us because the argument that's made is the fact that somehow if we talk about slavery in the Bible, then the Bible must be accepting of the slavery that we saw in America and elsewhere.
Yeah, that's ignorance. People don't understand there's different kinds of slavery in the world that exists today. There's 27 to 48 million slaves in the world today. And chattel slavery is what most people are familiar with. And then they impute that or transfer that meaning into the biblical account and say, well, that's how it's supposed to be. And no, it's not. And so I forget your question. That was a preliminary. I was going to get into something and I forgot what it was. Dang.
Okay, so we were talking about what the Bible discusses slavery. Of. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't approve of it any more than it approves of war. What it does is it works with it and will use it to accomplish, God will use it, these things to accomplish his will. So war, for example, is not something God desires and wants to occur in a direct sense, but in an indirect sense, yes, he can use it, and he uses it to clean out people's cleaner clocks. But slavery, what a lot of people don't understand, I did a lot of research in slavery on, let's see, quotes from ancient Near East law codes regarding slavery. And I went through seven different codes, Ur-Nammu, Lipit, Ishtar, Eshnunna, Hammurabi, Hittites, Middle Assyrian, and the 12 tables of Roman law. And these range anywhere from 2100 BC to 450 BC. And I went through these things, and then if you go to the article, you can see the brief summary of slavery in the ancient Near East. There are different kinds of slaves there, too. Punishment of slaves took many forms, from beating to cutting off the ear, salt in the mouth, repaying grain for theft of grain, generic. There's another thing. Slaves could be bought, sold, freed. There were palace slaves. And the one who returned a fugitive slave was rewarded. That's kind of, you know, the scriptures taught the contrary of that. You could become a slave by entering by debt. Punishment for harming a slave was by paying silver, replacing slaves, repaying silver for knocking out teeth, paying silver for breaking a slave's arm or leg, paying copper coins, causing a slave to miscarry, could be freed or punished at that point. Deflowering a female slave must pay 5 shekels. That's out of the code of Ur Nammu. You can read all these. I got these where they are. And free people as well as slaves in Israel and the ancient Near East were all beaten as a form of punishment. A lot of people don't know that. But nevertheless, God doesn't approve of it in the sense of, hey, this is what I want. This is great. I like it. This is good stuff. No, he permits it, and then he restricts it. So statistically, a lot of people don't realize that in some parts of the ancient Near East, 1 in 20 people were slaves. In Rome, it was up to 1 in 5 people were slaves. So what would happen in an economy, say, of 1 million people in a nation where, let's just say, 1 in 10 people were slaves? And you suddenly freed, so to speak, all these slaves. In 1 million people, 1 in 10 is 100,000 people. Well, what's going to happen? Where does 100,000 people go to for food? Where do they go to for shelter? What properties do they have all of a sudden? What do? They go back to their original lands if they were bought from that context. How do they get there? They had the money to get there. Are they able to travel? It's really a serious issue. And I've read articles before where if slavery were to suddenly end in Rome, it would have been absolute economic collapse. This doesn't make it okay. It's just a fact. Absolute economic collapse, which would have resulted in plague and famine. Because the economy would have tanked, people would have died, starvation, been rioting, the whole bit. So if God were to say, no more slavery right now, well, what's he going to do? Miraculous, make everybody have different parts of land, their buildings, the streams are now in all parts of land, so they got fish in there so they can eat, and everything's taken care of. It doesn't work like that. So God isn't approving of it. He's limiting it. He is using it because it's the choice of men to commit slavery, not the choice of God. And so God doesn't approve of it. He permits it. He allows it, like he allows murder and rape. And he permits these things. He permits various people to sin in various ways. And that's what that's about.
So one of the articles was very interesting that you did. I'm looking for the title. What are the different kinds of slavery in the world? I found this fascinating. You basically have in there a chart of the different types of slavery that there are. I was very glad to see you included sex slavery, because I find that so interesting. The people who are so against slavery that occurred 150 years ago seem to not care at all that there's a slavery that goes on today.
Right.
And in fact, many of them, I think I would argue, support that slavery in their pornography watching, right? Because that's where you end up having a lot of that sex slavery that they end up being involved in. So I found this very interesting. When you look at this, well, let me ask it this way. I'll ask you, when you look at these, give a high-level overview of the different types of slavery that we have in the world, and then explain which one you think the Bible fits into.
Well, there's chattel slavery, and that still exists in the world. It never existed in the Bible, though. Indentured servitude, that's basically the kind that was in the Bible mostly.
Well, explain cattle. Explain cattle, if you could, because I don't know if folks...
Chattel.
Explain that one.
Chattel. It means that the person himself or herself is owned and has no rights. Has no rights. That's it. They can be beaten. They can be murdered. They can be fed, not fed for a while, chained up, not whatever. No rights. Traded. Sold. That's what chattel slavery is. The Bible never supports that. The Bible actually condemns that. And then indentured servitude. indentured servitude is that you owe somebody money and you go into service and, until it's worked off and paid off, and it's usually by contract. But indentured servants, particularly the Israelites, were to be set free in a year of Jubilee, which was every 7 years. So they only had 6 years to work, and then they were set free in the year of Jubilee. So that's indentured servitude. It occurs today. And in serfdom, slavery occurs today. It's a contractual agreement where you work land, do certain things. But unfortunately, in serfdom throughout history and sometimes presently, physical abuse was approved of. But physical abuse is not approved of in the Bible. Now, it does talk about, and this is an important verse worth taking a look at, I'll explain it. If a man strikes a male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hand, he shall be punished. Now, it doesn't say what the punishment is, but if you go to verse 12, just in the same chapter, he who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. It appears that the punishment that the master would receive if he killed his servant would be that he'd be executed himself. There are other places. I'll get back to this in a second. You go to in chapter 21, verse 24. Oh, no, it's not there. Yeah, it's 26. If a man strikes the eye of his male or female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on account of his eye. If he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go on account of his tooth. Well, in chattel slavery, that's not the case. You beat somebody, you blind them, you break an arm, you knock their teeth out. That has no bearing on any punishment for the owner, so to speak, the master. So this kind of stuff prevents chattel slavery. But let's talk about this issue that a lot of people like to bring up, the atheists like to bring up. It's because of this verse, Exodus 21, 20 through 21, that I started studying this, because atheists the past few weeks have been bringing it up to me. So I thought, okay, I'm going to study it. And a rod is not an instrument of death. A rod is used as it's also translated as scepter. It can mean several things, but it's never an instrument of death. It's never intended to be an instrument of death any more than a spoon would be. A spoon is not an instrument of death, but you could use it to kill somebody if you know what to do, know how to apply it. So it's not an instrument of death. And it says, if he dies at his hand, he'll be punished. However, if he survives a day or two, that means if he can stand for a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken for his property. It looks like what the vengeance is related to the punishment, which is related to capital punishment. In other words, it looks like what this is saying is that if the master strikes and injures the slave, he'll be set free from later on in the text. In 26, 27, he says he'll be set free. But if he dies, this is the issue, if he dies, then how long did it take for him to die? If he died right away, then one interpretation is then the master is to be executed. But if he didn't die right away, then he's not to be executed. And because that he's given him the benefit of the doubt that it was not an attempt at murder. This is one of the theories that is applied to this text. Another one is that verse 21 says that they survive not just for 2 days, but they survive. But after this period of time, there's no punishment to be given to the master, but the slave will be set free per the verses of 26, 27. So this is not chattel slavery. It cannot be chattel slavery. We have forced labor today, debt labor, which is the kind of labor that debt labor and indentured. Debt labor, I think it's in 1 or 2 Kings 4:1. Elijah is there, and the woman says that the creditor is coming to take her two children for debt, just as to be taken for slaves. Well, it wasn't slaves in the sense of be beaten and all this stuff. The master had to provide room and board, water, food, everything. Had to take care of them, and knowing that they would be set free when the debt was paid. So this would mean they were fellow people, fellow citizens in the community. So you don't want to have someone that you've beaten, and then they're set free later on by mandate, because those people are going to talk about you to other people. And then your reputation is going to be damaged. That's not something that the creditor would want. So what we don't have in Israel are jails. You know, in Israel proper, not when Rome took over, but in Israel proper, they didn't have these things called jails. So if you were to create a crime, you would often be sentenced to serve the offended party, to serve them until the debt was paid off, then you were set free. It wasn't just put in a jail where it was expensive to maintain, expensive to build, and expensive to employ the people who would then take care of people. And so that kind of a concept really wasn't there. So what they would do is you had to go into a service, and you had to pay. And so that was the indebted, that was the debt labor that was there. So also there's sex slavery that's alive today. That was never the case in Israel. Anybody, a woman who's taken and was used for sex was to be married in order to do that. And marriage had certain privileges to it and responsibilities. And domestic servitude, that's kind of a real loose way of saying servants who can get paid just to work. And then, of course, child soldiers is another kind of slavery that goes on, where they're kidnapped, brainwashed, and forced to kill and shoot and all this kind of stuff. So there's different kinds that are existing today. And the kind that exists in the Bible could be considered indentured, and even forced labor, if you want to look at forced labor as a type of punishment, because someone who, you know, committed a crime will be forced to go in and pay off a debt through service. So those are the kinds that were allowed there, or debt labor. So it'd be indentured, debt labor, and forced labor were the main kinds that were approved of, or I should say worked with. And I actually could say those were approved of in the scriptures, because it was a means of paying off debt. And instead of just getting off where you don't do anything, you know, it's approved to pay, to be responsible for your actions and to pay off the debts that you've incurred. So in that sense, yeah, it's approved of, but not in the chattel slavery sense, not in the child soldier sense or sex slavery sense, things like that.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that people do is they think that, well, if slavery is mentioned in the Bible, and it is, does that mean God always approves of it? Well, we see slavery mentioned, the Roman slavery, which is not what God would, you know, God would be against that. And yet, even in that system, when Philemon, he's sent back to, you know, or Onesimus is sent back to Philemon. Mm-hmm. And we don't see something saying, oh, well, you know, you should just run away because he shouldn't be there. I think of, and I know some folks were in earlier. I'm probably going to jump to Ethan because I know he wanted to be on this topic. But let me say this before we bring Ethan in, is I think the best way, Matt, for us to think about the slavery that is mentioned in the Old Testament, that is approved by God, where he gives instruction on it, what I think we end up seeing there is it's more like the way Japan's economic system is set up. And for folks that don't understand Japan, people would work for a company for generations. I mean, like, you'd work for your company, your parents work for the company. Company owns everything. The company is, basically the company would buy your house, buy your cars, buy your cell phones, buy your clothes, pay for education, everything, the whole nine yards. And so the idea being that, well, if the company does better, then you can do better. And that way, that was the incentive to get them working. So what we end up seeing is that that system is very similar to the Old Testament system. They're still individuals. They're not property. There's rules on what could and couldn't happen with the owners, you know, or employers, think of it that way. But Japan is probably the closest we have today to the slavery that we'd see described in the Old Testament Bible. That doesn't mean that there weren't others that were abusing slavery. There were. We see that. And just because they've abused it, we still see God, you know, in the example of Philemon, he's not telling them to run away. He's not telling them to avoid it. He's saying to submit, especially if Onesimus had stolen some money. So let me bring Ethan in. Let's see. Ethan, you can unmute yourself. Let's see if I can. I can't unmute you, so you'll have to unmute yourself. I know he popped up there for a second. He was asking some questions in the chat. There we go. So, Ethan, you're sideways. Maybe turn your phone there a bit. Now you're upside down. That looks good. He's going to eventually get there. Turn it 180 degrees and then unmute yourself. All right. Try speaking so we see if we hear you. Don't hear you. You're probably on a phone or something. All right. Well, we'll leave you in while you work that out. Just give a shout if you figure that out. I'll bring Andrew in. He was first one in. I'll just put Ethan in the back. Ethan, just let us know when you think you're ready. You're first one in, Andrew. You gave us that wonderful rendition of Calvinists Are Not Saved. Thank you for that torture. You got to unmute yourself there. We don't hear you until you unmute. There you go.
Okay, sorry. Let's think about that for a second. I came across that one on Jeff Durbin's channel this morning when he was doing a premiere. It's actually pretty hilarious. I checked it out, then I thought I'd throw it onto somebody else.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for that torture. Did you have any questions here for us tonight, or?
Well, I was going to say it was cringeworthy, but it made me laugh. So I was hoping it might send some kind of, you know, relief amongst tension. But anyway, so the slavery is obviously confused. The literal slaves. Would they also, or would the world be confusing slaves of righteousness with the slavery?
So
what? Or with the job slavery?
So you're saying, would people confuse us being slaves of righteousness with the slavery that we see, like the African slave trade? Yeah. Is that what your question is?
Yeah, that's right.
So I guess your question would just be because the word slave is used?
Yeah, because the word slave is used, I think they would automatically think, oh, slave. Like when my church did this a couple of weeks ago in subjects that we were looking at, and one of them was actually slavery, and it was the International Justice Mission that came out and spoke to the church. One of the guys said they've actually got true stories of people going into the modern day slavery and rescuing people.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, there is slavery today. I think, I mean, Matt, I'm guessing you'd agree that this is a fallacy of equivocation. Just the fact that the word slave appears doesn't mean it's the same slavery.
Right.
I guess my immediate thinking, though, Andrew, would be the fact that, you know, only one translation of the Bible consistently translates the word slave as slave, and that's the Holman, mm-hmm. which is now out of print. They now call it the Christian Standard Bible. And so...
I just thought I'd write it, because it's...
Yeah. But if you notice, most of the translations will say, you know, Paul, a servant of God, when the actual Greek mm-hmm. is a slave. People have such a
doulos.
Yeah, doulos, and people just don't like the idea of slavery. So the only time that slavery often is translated as slave or slavery is when it's speaking of someone that's in slavery. That'd be my response, Matt. I don't know what your thoughts would be on that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the extension of it, like there's in Australia we have what's called a supported wage scheme, which is you either have full pay with less hours or full hours, less pay in the position that you occupy. So, for example, I was on this a couple of years ago before I was married. The thing was you've paid roughly three quarters the wages of the other people, and you were essentially doing the same thing as them. Would that also be considered a form of slavery?
Depends how you define slavery. It's all by definitions. A form of mm-hmm. depends. How are we defining it? That's just the issue.
Well, just to give you a difference between the pay packet, when I first started that job as the supported wage scheme, I was on $3.72 an hour. The other people were on $10 an hour. And then, of course, on the pay rise, everything went up. Theirs went up by about $5, but mine ended up going up by about all the other guys who were employed under the scheme, which was, I think, three or four of us. Our wage packet went up the equivalent of 60 cents or something like that.
Well, let me ask you, did you agree to work?
Yeah, unfortunately, I agreed because there was nothing else.
Well, and that's your agreement. You have no right to complain because...
Yeah, I know. I wasn't trying to complain, but okay. I was just wondering, yeah. That's the sort of thing that exists.
I wouldn't call that a form of slavery. I would just call it how an economic system is established.
Okay, thank you.
That's all. You remember the... this relates to it a little bit, the... Goodness, feedback. I forget what the parable is where a man has workers who go out like at 9 o'clock in the morning, another set at noon, another set at three, and they all get paid the same.
Oh, yeah. The vineyard. Yeah, I gotcha.
And so the people are complaining. Wait a minute. They worked just a couple hours. And they get the same as, hey, didn't you agree to this? Was the landowner? He said, didn't you agree? Yes. Yeah. Well, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. I never forgot that. It's true. You make an agreement. That's what you live with. You don't have the right to complain. You negotiate something later on.
To that. Yeah. Okay.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, Andrew. I'm going to put you in backstage. Just let me know if you have another question. Matt, well, before I bring... I guess the person I was going to bring up next is gone. But I have someone you know sent me a text. So Cameron is watching.
And hey, Cameron.
I think maybe you might have a response to him.
I try and ignore Cameron.
So this is what he sent me a text. He says, I guess I have the right Bible translation, Holman Christian Standard Bible, way better than the NASB.
Yeah, that's because he's a heretic.
He's saying he's watching on his Xbox, so he can't comment like normal. Oh. I might agree with that. Sometimes he may be a heretic. I don't know. All right, let's bring John in. John, did you have a question for us tonight? You got to unmute.
Yeah, I just unmuted. I was going to actually make a couple of points concerning this topic, because usually in most cases and you guys kind of touched up on this already, but usually what happens is whenever you do have this topic of slavery, most people will go back to the American Civil War type of slavery that we're accustomed to, basically. They think of Roots, they think of Kuta Kinte, it's the same thing over and over. I usually, whenever like an atheist wants to bring this up when it comes to slavery, the first thing I want to ask them is, what's your stance on abortion? You know, and that's the first thing I want to find out, because if, you know, they're going to make an argument that, you know, God is unjust with punishing people with slavery, I'd love to know what their stance is when it comes to, you know, the tearing of children out of the womb, and most of the time they have no problem with abortion. They think it's a woman's right. And I was like, well, then, you know, you're just as guilty. You know, you can't point this out to Christians saying that this is proof that, you know, God is an unjust person. Unjust God, you know, and it's silly. Anyways, your thoughts.
I agree with you. Well, people are hypocritical, you know, don't have slavery. They misrepresent what slavery is in the Bible. They condemn the whole Bible because of a misrepresentation. They haven't done their homework, don't want to do their homework. And then when you ask them difficult questions, they bow out because they don't want to be able to be pressed. They're inconsistent. This is the way of the unbeliever. So that's what it is.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to...
I think Ethan's ready.
Huh?
I think Ethan just said he fixed the...
I'm going to try to bring Ethan in. And I see David Lang is watching on Facebook. David, you should get in here. Ask some questions. David, he probably has some good questions. I'd like to see David and Matt, you know, spar. That would be fun. Yeah. See how his Krav Maga works up against David's jiu-jitsu. My theory, yeah, that doesn't work. By the way, Cameron says that, Matt, his wife agrees with you that he's a heretic.
Yep.
Okay, Ethan, you're in. Let's see if we hear you now. No, we don't hear you. You got to get a computer with a microphone. did you give, Ethan, did you give permission to use your mic, maybe? I think sometimes with the phones you have to do the video and or the camera and the mic separately. All right. So Metal Minister says if his computer wasn't currently updating, he'd be joining in. You can use a phone. So that's an idea. All right, well, we'll wait. Let me bring Vincent in while Ethan tries to fix that. Vincent, you're
Hello,
in.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you, sir.
Because I'm on a PC with a mic. Anyway, I don't know what verses y'all have gone over on this subject so far, but the one I always turn to, Proverbs 22:7. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender. Mm-hmm. Usually when I bring that up to people, you talk to people, especially in America, well, I'm not a slave. I've never been enslaved. Well, if you've ever owed anyone anything, you actually are in a form of slavery to that person. Try not paying that back and see if it doesn't cause your life, you know, hardship. I mean, right. People do not relate it as a form of slavery, but the Bible does say that if you owe somebody something, you're a slave to that person. I just wanted to bring that up because I usually point that out to people because, especially in America, they just don't relate it to slavery at all.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting what David Lang says here. David says, so it's because of the limits of the English language, slave. English word is one word, where in Portuguese there's four different words for slave, and so that's an interesting thing that we end up seeing. Different languages have more words to refer to stuff, and that makes it a little bit clearer sometimes what is being discussed. So, all right, let me see if there's any. Vincent, do you have anything else?
No, that's it. I'm just enjoy listening. So
okay, I'll put you in.
There is one thing that I think is worth bringing up, and it's an issue of slavery that is a little bit different, because you know slaves are to be set free, but there's a kind of slavery that isn't. And in Leviticus 25, I have this in the last article listed there. It says, as for your male and female slaves whom you have, you may acquire male and female slaves from pagan nations that are around you. Then, too, it is out of the sons of the sojourners who live as aliens among you that you may gain acquisition, and out of their families who are with you, whom they will have produced in your land, that they may become your possession. You may even bequeath them to your sons after you to receive as a possession. You can use them as permanent slaves. But in respect to your countrymen, the sons of Israel, you shall not rule over with severity one another. That was an interesting challenge to find out what was going on with that. It's worth addressing here. And as I say in that article there, first of all, the Old Testament does not establish slavery. It acknowledges it. The issue of foreign-born slaves, why would they be foreign-born? Why would we have foreign slaves, and why are they in perpetuity? Well, I started researching, and I came up with. I'm going to fix a break there. I'm watching YouTube, but I'm not sure how to join. Just go to Facebook and try it on Facebook. You can type in comments, or can you put the StreamYard Facebook. Facebook.
If people go to because there's some people saying that they have to be invited to video chat for this is a Facebook Live, but it's not to join. You have to go to apologeticslive.com. So if anyone that wants to join, go to apologeticslive.com. There's a link to StreamYard, and from there you can join us. And so you can't join through Facebook the way a normal Facebook Live is, because we're streaming right now through Twitter, through YouTube and Facebook all at the same time. And so the way to join is to go to apologeticslive.com. And there's a link to join there that is a StreamYard link. So, So Matt, with that, let me, because it is an interesting thing when we talk about the Gentiles with the slavery, because, and I didn't see if you addressed this in maybe you addressed in some of the articles or ones you're working on, but there a really challenging one in Leviticus, and I think it's 25, is if you have you have a Jubilee year where someone is set free, but then after that, there is a, if they marry someone, so someone goes and marries somebody and they're a slave, they're Jewish, they get set free in the Jubilee year, but if they go free, they basically have to divorce their wife. I mean, they leave their wife who's in slavery. Or they can choose to be, they can choose to stay with their wife and be in, you know, be a slave for life, a choice that they make. And there's some distinction there, but the biggest part is what you mentioned. The biggest distinction we see there is the distinction between what, how God has established that Israel would have slaves of other Israelites versus Gentiles. So there is that distinction there.
Yeah, there is. And I was trying to figure out what the distinction, what the reason for the distinction was. And I really didn't find much. I started looking in commentaries, but didn't really find much. Except we can very clearly say there's a distinction between the Jewish people who are covenantally with God and the non-Jewish people who are not covenantally involved with God. So there's a differentiation there. I don't know how to expand on that, but that would be worth, you know, a study project. But also, I started thinking about it. You know, a lot of times what we do is we fail to put flesh and blood on issues. And what's it like flesh and blood-wise? We can sit in an armchair and talk about something, but go outside and try and dig that ditch and then come back and write about it instead of sitting in your desk first and writing about it. You'll have a different article. Well, let's put flesh and blood on this. Why were foreign people considered slaves? Under what conditions? Mainly, it was from war, and a lot of times it was from in debt. Because a foreigner could be indebted to people in Israel. But think about that. He's outside of Israel. How is it that they would get inside of Israel physically in order to become a slave? It doesn't make sense. Because if they're indebted outside of slavery, well, they should basically, they'll stay away. They don't come in. So why are they brought in? It makes more sense to say that's because they're from pagan nations and dealing with wars. And so, though there are different ways of unbelievers in pagan nations to enter into slavery, the majority of it by far was through war, through conflict. So I started putting flesh and blood on this, and think about this. There's a couple of issues worth looking at. For one, excuse me, what happens to a nation when they fight another nation? It's the men who go out and fight. Not the young boys, not the young girls, not the women. Now, occasionally, there may be one or two here or there that do. But no, it's the men who got in fight. And so the losing country basically had its male population pretty much wiped out. And if it was wiped out, well, not only that, but the economy of that losing nation was wiped out. So there would be slaves. There would be, there would be a famine. There'd be plague. So what would happen was a lot of times the victorious nation would take the losing people, take them as slaves in order to pay off the debt that the victorious nation incurred in fighting the other nation, particularly if the other nation started it and then they end up losing. Well, now you got a debt to pay. You guys started it. Now, it may or may not happen that way, but this idea. Anyway, so they would become slaves. They would be bought as slaves because they most probably were slaves from capture of war. Now, if they're going to be from the issue of capture of war, then the perpetuity of it would not, their ownership would not be because their souls and their bodies were considered property to be owned, because they were still under, I forgot the references, I don't have all this memorized yet, where the Jews and the non-Jews were told in Scripture to be treated equally, except for the issue of being released. there was a difference, because I believe it's because of covenant faithfulness of God to the Jews. He wanted them to stay covenantally on the land. And that's one of the reasons he says for the Jubilee, because you could be in one part of Israel and enslaved to move to another part of Israel to pay off a debt. And then once you were freed, you were to go back to your original land, because it was a covenant aspect of God's faithfulness to Israel. And he actually says that so that they will be with their land that they would have been given. It was important to God that this happened. But there is no such case like that with the pagan nations, because they didn't have any Israel land, and the covenant aspect in that regard didn't apply to them. So that's one reason. Another reason, I think, was because if they were to be set free after, say, 6 years, well, then they'd go back to their original country. But what if they went back to the original country and a bunch of people did that and said, let's start another war with Israel because we didn't like being slaves? And so whatever the reason might be. So it would be a form of stopping future wars by keeping them as perpetual slaves. That's another possibility right there. And another possibility is that, as I had mentioned earlier, the debt that was incurred through war time was to be paid back to the individual families of Israel whose families themselves had gone out for war. Maybe they'd lost somebody. So these slaves were taken in as a means of replacement of the family members who might have produced for them. So there's that. And also, if possibly you were to release the slaves, the pagan nation slaves, into Israel, and so you can go, and some of them went back to their own homeland, then you had this, like I said earlier, this issue of them rising up again and fighting. But what would happen with those slaves who said, forget this, I've learned the language, I've learned the culture, I'll stay here? Well, the pagans were often very pagan. And if they were allowed to flourish inside of Israel in their paganism, that could be an internal problem that has obviously and always been a problem within Israel's history, that they had turned to paganism in various forms and various ways. And so if they were set free, that would be more of a probability of occurring in that sense. So I looked at this and I thought, I wonder if those are some of the reasons that the slavery was perpetual in that sense, ultimately come down to protecting Israel, not only protecting Israel in different senses, from a potential hostile regathering of the pagans to come in again, and protecting Israel internally if the freed slaves were to stay with their paganism that would then flourish and prosper inside of Israel. They couldn't have that. So the people would be required to stay in the households and were required to participate in the Jewish festivals and things like that, and not in their paganism. So that, I think, would be important to know, ultimately, since that non-intermingling would make sure, so to speak, that the people of Israel's Messiah would be allowed to be born in the future generations, because if the paganism of Israel gets in and it destroys a messianic line, we wouldn't have a savior. I hope all that made sense.
Which
this is the first time I've said all this.
Yeah, and that's consistent with what we see with all of the laws of Israel, keeping them separate from the other nations. This is, a lot of people don't understand the kosher laws, but they were there to keep them separate from the other nations. You know, one of the things I think very interesting, if we look at the the verse that's used so often by the Black Hebrew Israelites, is Deuteronomy 28:68. And the reason I think that's so interesting of a verse is because this verse actually talks about a slavery that they put themselves into. Now, Black Hebrew Israelites try to say that because the word ship is there, that this means this is the African slave trade, but it's either all figurative or all literal. It says, "And I will bring you back in ships to Egypt, a journey I promised you that you would never make again. And there you shall offer yourselves for sale to your enemy as male and female slaves, but you will have no buyer." And I think that's very interesting, that you end up seeing there is, you know, the case where here you have them selling themselves as slaves, even though they end up having no buyers. And there is a, I think it was, I want to say, I, I thought it might have been Isaiah 24. I found a verse recently. I'm going to have to look it up again. I was doing devotions, and there was a passage that referred to the when the Assyrians took over Egypt, to that reference in Deuteronomy, being that they sold them, they went to Egypt to sell themselves as slaves. I'm going to bring Ethan in again. He's on a computer. We'll see how this works this time. Hello, Ethan.
Can you hear me?
We hear you. All right.
Okay, so Matt, can you explain your view on free will and why do you believe that, and what verses you use? I know you're going to say that it's because you read the Bible, but can you give me, explain some verses that bring you to that conclusion?
Well, I like free will. I think it's a good thing, and the Bible teaches it, so what's the problem?
Well, hold on, Matt. Hold on. I'm going to challenge that, Matt. Does the Bible teach we have a free will, or does it teach that we have an enslaved will?
Well, I was answering like that. I wanted him to get more specific in his questioning.
I think we all agree that we have a will. I'll challenge whether it's free.
Okay, so you don't believe that we have a libertarian free will?
Ah, there you go. Now you're talking.
So why don't
please
you
define that? Please define libertarian free will. Just make sure we're on the same page. That's all.
So libertarian free will is that. That God, that basically our will is separate from God in the way that he can know that we can do something contrary to what he knows we're going to do, basically.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
We can't do anything contrary to the knowledge and will of God, because the Bible says he knows all things, 1 John 3:20, and he works all things after the counsel of his will, Ephesians 1:11. So that part doesn't exist. That definition of libertarianism can't work, right? Right?
Yes.
Okay. So libertarianism... libertarian free will is the idea that a person's human free will is not compatible with God's sovereignty and predestination. So I call libertarianism non-compatibilism. So let's start with what compatibilism is. Compatibilism is the idea that our free will choices are compatible with God's sovereignty, election, predestination. A libertarian would say that's not the case. Libertarian is a non-compatibilist. And so let's talk about what free will is. So let me ask you a question. What's your first name?
Ethan.
Okay, Ethan. Is your last name Hunt?
No, Tanner.
Okay, I was just watching some Mission Impossible a little bit. I was just wondering,
I didn't know where you were going with that.
It was bad. All right. So does free will mean you have to have the ability to be able to make a choice that's not forced? Okay, you freely choose it, and you have to be able to accomplish what you choose to do. Would that be free will?
Yes.
No. Put your hand in front of your face like this and look to your left and slap yourself upside the head. Free will. Can God choose to do evil?
No.
So we can choose to do evil. So our wills and God's wills are different in one respect, but similar in another. When we say that we have free will, what we basically mean is this, that we are free in to be able to make a choice consistent with what we are. So this is what's really important. God can only choose what's consistent with his own nature. His nature's holy, but he cannot choose to do anything unholy. He's restricted by his own nature. So too are we restricted by our nature as well. Would you agree?
Yes.
So can we choose to do something we can't even think of? we're not aware of?
No, we can't.
Good. So a person can only choose to do something that he's aware of choosing to do.
Yes.
Okay. So if we're not able to be aware of something, we can't choose it.
Yes.
And that does not mean we don't have free will. It just means we don't have that ability to choose something because we can't choose it. It's not a restriction on our freedom. It's just what's natural to our essence, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Hey, Matt.
So what is the
Hey, Matt, let me just do this because we got someone that has a question for you, and he only has about 5 minutes before he's got to go to work. Can we switch gears just for 5 minutes?
Sure, real fast.
All right. I'm going to bring David in. So, David, go for it. Yeah, I know you.
Hey, Matt, how's it going, brother?
It's going, man.
So, in terms of, real quick, in terms of Krav Maga, you would do better managing distance, but you better hope and pray to God that I don't get that single leg. You're going to have a rough night.
Get the what? I couldn't understand.
Single leg. If he gets a hold of your leg.
Hope, pray, I am
not tracking. I don't understand.
If he grabs a hold of your leg, you're going down on the ground, he's saying.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But for sure.
You look like an MMA fighter guy. I mean, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm a little older now, but yeah, for a bit too long, I had a lot of rough fights, but now I've got kids. And,
okay.
You
know,
once you have kids and get a little bit more mature, I guess that fire starts dying down and you start realizing, you know, I don't really like getting hit in the face. It's nice to be the hammer, but it's not nice to be the nail. And, you know, $1,000 isn't really worth it to step in there with another man that, you know, wants to kill you.
Yeah, I just took Krav Maga, so I have something to be able to use. I mean, obviously, there's guys who are just bigger and faster, and that's just what's going to happen. I might last half a second, but you never know. You know, might get a good shot in. At least I have a fighting chance. So.
Oh, great.
Okay, now here's the thing.
There's a guy I know. He can bench 400 pounds 13 times, for real. And I could use all the Krav Maga. I would only make a deal with him. I get the first 5 shots for free. Okay. Then we can discuss. Yeah, it had to be well placed, and you got to cooperate. That'd be the only way.
Now, here's the interesting thing, David, is Matt does not like watching mixed martial arts. He chooses to take one of the most aggressive styles.
The most violent martial art possible.
Hey, look at Kung Fu Sensu. I took that for a couple of years. It's a very aggressive style of fighting also. I believe in just getting it done. If I ever have to fight anybody, I'm going to go for a throat punch or a solar plex punch, or I'm going to break a collarbone, get it done. I don't want to fight anybody because I'll get my rear handed to me. Or I have a black belt in Run Fu. You know? I'll just run.
I had been kind of talking about with Andrew for, I don't know, probably a couple months now, and I've seen this new disturbing trend, kind of being a little bit of a, you know, growing up Jewish and becoming Christian, and the disturbing trend I've been seeing, and I've spoke to Andrew about it a bunch of times, is kind of an old thing, but it's made a resurgence of Christians, I'm going to call them that. They're not Christians. I don't care what anybody says. But these supposed Christians saying, oh, well, those are Paul's words. So it's really, you know, kind of cherry picking scripture and people kind of taking the stance. Well, you know, that women preaching, you know, that it goes along with that whole thing where, oh, well, that was Paul's words and I follow Jesus's words. And it's one of those things where I really find myself with a complete lack of patience and kindness and the ability to try to explain. It's like somebody's trying to debate geometry with you, but they don't understand the concept of addition.
Right.
How do you recommend, I don't want to say combating, but kind of combating this and kind of.
Sure. It's easy.
With these people.
Acts 9:15. Remember Acts 9:15. Okay, so in Acts 9, Paul gets his rear handed to him, right? Knocked off his horse. Jesus appears to you, persecute. And Ananias and they're talking the whole bit. At any rate, but the Lord said to him, "Go, for he, Paul, is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel.
Ooh, I like that. That's fire. Okay.
So when people say, well, that's just Paul's words, there's two ways to tackle it. One is I go, well, Romans, Acts 9:15 said, Jesus said, Paul's in a chosen instrument of Jesus. Are you saying Jesus was wrong?
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Okay. So it's right upon Christ is the one who called him. Christ did this, right? Okay, so that's another thing. Now, you can argue with that from different directions, obviously. You can just harp on them. But that's what Jesus said. Jesus said this. These are his words. They're in red. He's a chosen instrument of mine. So Jesus specifically called the murderer Saul and brought him into the faith, granted that he believed, because it wasn't Paul's free will at this point. So it was, but I'm using it very, very loosely. He wasn't out there going, hey, I'm going to go out and follow Jesus. No, he got knocked off his horse. In a sense, all the circumstances forced him to believe. What are you going to do? There it is, right? And then he's a chosen instrument of Jesus. So that means, and to do what? To bear my name before the Gentiles, right? And the kings and the sons of Israel. So he's specifically sent to the Gentiles. So Paul is the apostle to the Gentiles. Peter is the apostle to the Jews. So if he's apostle to the Gentiles, Ephesians, Colossians, Galatians, these are epistles to the Gentiles. Yes, there were Jews scattered amongst them and within them. So there you go. Second thing I'll do is I'll say, are you saying to me then that basically what Paul was saying is his opinion? So Paul's opinion, right, about these things, you really shouldn't follow Paul because it's just this kind of opinion, right? That's what it comes down to. And so Let me ask you, you disagree with Paul, for example, women pastors and elders, all that stuff. And I'll say, because they'll say, I've had them say to me, well, that's just Paul's opinion. I go, oh, okay. So in 1 Timothy 3:15, Paul says he's giving instruction on how to handle the people to behave in the household of God. So he is giving instruction to the household of God. Now, that's just his opinion. I ask him, does that mean your opinion is just as good as Paul the Apostle?
Ooh.
Because if you're going to disagree with Paul, that means your opinion is on the same level as Paul. And you have the right to say, well, Paul was wrong about that. And then if I was in the room with them talking, I'd take a step backwards. Well, I'm saying that one step. See, and if you're going to say that, you know, that you're on the same level as Paul, take another step backwards. They might go, what are you doing? Well, I don't want to be near you when the bolt of lightning hits you. I'm distancing myself, okay? And so, you know, so this is the kind of logic I'll use because it's stupidity. It is stupidity.
Yeah, and I'm going to, you know, David, I know you got to go because you got to head to work, but I'm going to the Rap Report this weekend is going to cover Red Letter Christianity. There's a couple ways, you know. I mean, you could look at what 2 Peter 3:15-16 say. They end up saying that, you know, Peter says that what Paul says is scripture. And really, the reason they don't like Paul, and it's really Paul they don't like, only because of one thing. He says things they don't like, that women can't be pastors or preachers, and that homosexuality is wrong. Well, there's other places where it says both of those things, so it's not just Paul. And if you look at Paul in 1 Timothy says, they make it sound like this is not the Lord, this is I. Well, that's not the way he says it in 1 Corinthians 14, where he's quite clear. This is a commandment for all churches. Well, then that's a command for all churches that women are to be silent. So, at the heart of the issue is, do they believe in inspiration? Do they believe that the red letters are the same as the black letters? I mean, I can make my whole Bible red letter then, right? Does that make it? But the reality, what they're really saying is somehow by the words of Jesus, it counts more. However, how do they know those words Jesus said? Did it come from Jesus? No, because he didn't write the Bible. Yeah. It came from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So you have to take the words of those men. So then now the question is, why do you put those men and what they wrote above what, and only parts of what they wrote, above what Paul wrote? And the real issue is it's all inspired by God. That's the real challenge there. And so what they're really doing is questioning the inspiration and infallibility of Scripture. That's really what they end up questioning. So
awesome. That helped. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in. Good to see you. And we'll have to get you and Matt, you know, on the mats.
Yeah, I'm too old. I'm almost 63, and I got a bad back.
Have a good night,
guys. I mean, just look at his right. guns there, man. His guns are bigger than all your guns that you got in your house there.
That's
You got the AK-47, but you know, I'll take look at his compared to yours, man.
All right, good night, man.
Okay. Bye.
All right, so back to our discussion here. Ethan, sorry about that. Thank you for doing that, just because I knew he sent a message saying, hey, I only got like 8 minutes before I get to work. So
yeah.
Continue.
All right, so we have to be able to act in a manner consistent with our nature, right? Yes. Now, what does the Bible say about the nature of the unbeliever?
It's sinful.
Yep. And it's a slave of sin, Romans 6, 14 through 20. Cannot receive or understand spiritual things, 1 Corinthians 2, 14. He is by nature a child of damnation, Ephesians 2, 3. His righteous deeds are filthy rags, Isaiah 64, 6. Does not seek for God and doesn't do any good, Romans 3, 10, 11, and 12. Now, so I'm going to just step aside here and show you something. I could get my cat. And does my cat have free will?
I mean... I guess it, what do you mean, in what sense?
Is it freely able to make choices that are not forced and can do what it wants?
Yes.
Yeah. And so my cat has free will. This is why definitions are so important. When someone defines something in one way to lean towards their presupposition, well, that's interesting. What I like to do is define free will by God's nature. He's the standard, not man. So God's nature is holy. He cannot choose to sin, but he still has freedom. So he's restricted by his nature, just as we are restricted by our nature. As you admitted, no one can choose to do something they're not even aware of, can't even conceive of. My cat cannot conceive of the idea of doing the square root of 9. Is not capable, but the incapacity of that does not mean my cat doesn't have the free will to choose to do whatever it wants to do. Now, when we talk about free will, we go, wait a minute, cats don't have free will in the same sense a human does. Depends on how we're defining free will. So what I'm trying to illustrate is my cat has cat free will. Catamatic, says Andrew, somebody's singing there. And because I have two cats, right? And one of them is super affectionate, almost demands affection, literally. Just, if he could speak English, pet me, pet me, pet me. That's him, all right? And so he's certainly free to have me pet him, my wife pet him, go sleep on the couch, go sleep on the floor, whatever. I'm not forcing him to. So he has free will, doesn't he? Yeah, he does. God has free will, but even God cannot sin. He cannot choose to sin. Okay. An unbeliever has free will. He can't choose to do that which is good. Now, when we talk about this, people go, wait a minute. No, no. He drops his wallet, and an unbeliever gives the wallet back. That's a good thing. No, it's not. What's a good work? See, if in an atheist worldview, a wallet gets dropped and an atheist gives it back, that's a good work, they say. Well, in an atheist worldview, there is no such thing as good and bad, except there's this subjectivity of what is good and bad. And it's valueless. It's kind of arbitrary. Is it ontologically good? Is there something by nature that which is good? And something that by nature that is bad? So goodness must be that it is based in the nature of God himself, and consistent with the revelation in the Word of God. So an unbeliever can do no good, because he can never do work that is thereby for the purpose of glorifying God and for the standard of being bought in Christ. Otherwise, it's ultimately selfish for his own glory. So he can do no good work. So we get into the definitions of good when it says he can do no good. So let's just talk about this. The unbeliever then, without quoting the addresses, can do no good, doesn't seek for God, cannot receive or understand these things, is by he's dead in his sins, by nature child of wrath, and slave of sin, and his heart's desperately wicked and deceitful, and cannot be trusted. So, is he free?
No.
Sure he's free. He is free to act in a manner consistent with what he is.
Okay.
He's going to freely choose to do that which is in rebellion against God. No one's forcing him. Right?
Yes.
So an atheist who is a hater of God, does no good, doesn't seek for God, is by nature child of wrath and damnation, is certainly free to continue to hate God and deny him. No one's forcing him to. He has free will. So the idea of free will must be understood that we are only as free as our nature permits us to be free. My cat can't do mathematics, can't do square roots and exponents. And God cannot sin. An unbeliever cannot freely choose God, but he has free will. So libertarianism says a man's free will is not compatible with God's sovereign grace. What that implies is that in order for free will to exist, it must be independent of God. That is heresy that should be written on toilet paper and used in the bathroom and flushed on the toilet. To say that man's freedom is not compatible with the sovereignty of God is ludicrous, childish idiocy. Because God, who works all things after the counsel of his will, I'll ask the libertarians, he works all things, right? Yes. All things after the counsel of his will, right? Does your free will choice include it in that? Yes. Then you can't be libertarian, can you? Argument's over.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So, compatibilism. Let's look at some verses on compatibilism a little bit, if you want. You probably get a lot more than you ask for. You're probably saying to yourself, when can I get away from this? When can I get away? I'm done. I can't take it anymore. Okay? So here's what, I can put the text in, the text on the chat room, start to hear feedback. Therefore, Jesus answered and said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. Okay, let me, I don't know what's going on with the mic here. I'm going to mute myself.
Yeah, I think it's on your side because I was hearing it when I was speaking. There's some on your side, Nick, I think.
It's no, you were really bad. Ethan, you say some stuff.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's happening with him too.
Yeah, I'm hearing you guys fine. Ethan, you hearing Matt fine?
It's all like distorted.
It's distorted? I hear everything distorted. Hmm. And Andrew Graham says, Andrew, you're distorting.
It's fixed now.
Yeah, it's fixed. Yeah, I'm okay. All right, so if you look at the text, we'll keep going. Jesus says, truly, truly, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son also does in like manner. Would you say Jesus had free will?
Yes.
But he can only do what he sees the Father do.
Well, he has free will in the sense that it's not libertarian, it's compatibilism.
Oh, you are a smart guy. You're doing so well. I'm so happy that you have freely seen the logic and the truth of this issue. Look in the text again. I put another verse there. Jesus says, I can do nothing of my own initiative. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I do not seek my own will, but the will of him who sent me. I can do nothing of my own initiative. Does Jesus have free will? Yes. That's compatibilism right there. God's sovereignty over the person and work of Christ.
Yeah. There we go. The reason why I was asking is, as I talked to Andrew on email a little while back about my brother, that's in, he's in a cult kind of, we could call it a cult. Originally I was talking to him. And so originally he was basically, he got connected with this one guy And basically, he convinced him to go off completely off his ADHD medicine that he has been on since he was four. The doctor said he could have died by just going off this medicine cold turkey. And then they convinced him to go into this sleep pattern where he's only getting 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night and then staying up for, and he works second shift, so this is horrible. And then right after that, they did this Bethel Sozo memory recovery therapy on him.
Oh, and, wow, I want to hear about that. I'm starting my study on them and stuff.
Yeah, wow. So basically they implanted memories into his head that he did all these things to his sister. And
you know, Matt, this almost sounds like, you remember when we dealt with the Cult of Wells, or the Church of Wells, but we call it the Cult of Wells. You know, yeah. they used to just keep people sleep deprived so that they can, you know, easily, you know, interject thoughts and brainwashing. I'm going to see if I can get an interview. There's a lady who moved out to Pennsylvania from California. She actually worked for Bill Johnson there at Bethel. She volunteered for him. And she had
to talk to her.
Well, we don't have a lot of time to talk to her because she's dying. She has breast cancer, and it was completely treatable, completely. And she listened to Bill Johnson, decided to get off the cancer treatment, and just pray and have faith. And so now the cancer has spread throughout her body. And now she is basically dying. She came to move in with her parents so she could basically pass away. And she supposedly said to Bill, like, what's going on here? Like, you know, I'm being faithful. And he just said, I don't know. Like, you know, and here people are dying, and these guys are just, they don't care. It's just about them making their money and stuff. So
I would like to talk to her. I'm sorry that she's...
Oh, yeah. I'm going to try to see if I could set something up and you know, try to get it, you know, videoed so that at least, you know, she can get her message out there.
But yeah, I'd love to be able to talk to her and get the audio or whatever it is, because I'm starting the research on NAR now.
Yeah, it's bad news. Yes, and I mean, let me just say this, Ethan, I think I've told you this, but for folks who are watching, you know, the issue is when you're on these mood altering drugs, the drugs for ADHD, things like that, especially for people who've been on them for some people 30, 40 years, and they want to not feel that dependency on medication. That's fine, but there are certain drugs that you cannot just stop cold turkey. It is dangerous. And it's dangerous when pastors tell people that, oh, you should just be off medication. You know, if you're not a doctor, don't be telling them that. I mean, there is a way to get off of those things. You have to do it gradually. You can't just do cold turkey. And that's the dangerous thing. And some of these groups, they'll talk about, well, you got to live by faith. They make it as if you're lacking faith by doing things, trusting medicine, anything like that. And the reality is they end up putting people in dangerous positions.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Put on top of that, lack of sleep.
It's been about 2 years now that he's been doing this. He's struggling with his job. He works at Bosch and on an assembly line, so it's very hard to, because the doctor said it's one of the worst cases of ADHD that they've seen, and bipolar. He's bipolar also. So it's one of the worst cases they've ever seen, and so he's really struggling. And just recently he was going on 20 hours. A day of going 20 hours straight of not sleeping every day, and then driving to work. We believe he's gotten in a couple different. He's hit a couple different things we can tell by his car, but he denies hitting things. But he has dents in the front bumper, so it's very weird. I also wanted to ask. So my church right now is going through a little change. I've talked to my worship pastor at my church about Bethel and Hillsong, because we play Bethel and Hillsong songs in our church. And I've talked to them about it.
Yeah.
And And so it's kind of in the state of just the elders are, but so I don't really know. I've talked with different elders about it, and it was a rough situation. He just got, he resigned because he got caught plagiarizing extensively for about 20 years. And so there, it's, our church is like broke, very broken. Well, right,
plagiarizing
now.
What, sermons?
Yes.
I've heard of others doing that.
Oh, yeah.
All you got to do is just say during a sermon, and I got this from so and so, and you go on. What's the big deal?
No, what some of these guys do, Matt, and I know, and there's services people actually pay for sermons, but I had someone that contacted me. He's a fellow pastor. He said, hey, listen, what do I do? My brother is in a church where the guy, their pastor had never been out of the state ever. He ended up finding out that this pastor was reading MacArthur's sermons. And when I say reading them, he literally even gave an illustration that MacArthur had in his sermon from growing up near Philly. And the guy who's never been out of the state he's in reads this. And that's what triggered this guy's brother, because he was like, wait a minute, you've never been out of the state? You didn't grow up by Philly. And so he started to realize this is someone else's sermons. And week after week, he kept searching and realized that verbatim, this guy was reading MacArthur's sermons every week. This verse after, you know, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And so he actually started printing the commentaries or the sermon notes from the next text, and he'd read along with the pastor MacArthur's sermon. And I'm just like, you know, you got to confront that. I mean, it's good that they confronted it in your case, Ethan, and that he's.
I plagiarized sermons. My own.
I was going to say you plagiarize images from MRM.
That's true.
You stole Bill McKeever's image.
I totally stole him. That's right. Bill asked me, "Did you steal an image?" Yeah, I did.
I mean, you plagiarized from me when you said, "You know, demons of a feather flock together." I put it online first.
Yeah, you be careful. I'm going to take a step back from you when you start talking like that.
Okay, he said it first. I just put it online before he could get to the internet.
So, well, I've been sitting over the years on radio. So, Nathan, does that help? I mean, you know, Ethan. Sorry about your brother, man. He's in a cult. It sounds like some wacko thing. But are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And so you got this additional church thing going with the pastor, or with them using Bethel Music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll be having to deal with this. And because of this, one of the things I'm going to be doing is developing a section where I actually analyze song lyrics. And I'll just be making brief commentary, reproducing them and say, this is from here. Give the quotes. This is what it is. There's a way to block quotes and put a citation in it and inside of HTML. It's all, you know, and then make commentary on these things. But I love, to be honest, I love Bethel music. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. The problem is it comes out of a heretical source a lot of times. I can't trust it.
Yeah.
So I can't recommend it.
Let me ask this, Ethan. Do your pastors see that Bethel and Hillsong are heretical?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They
So the issue is they realize that source is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then that's going to play into what Matt was saying, because this is the way you have to explain it, though. And, you know, the way Matt's going about it is say, you know, the lyrics, because some of their lyrics are heretical, but some are not bad. But the problem is that, and this is what Justin Peters always says, even if they sing a couple good songs and you sing those in church, what happens is they are very clear that they use the music as a gateway into their cult.
Yep.
Right? So that they're very clear about that. Therefore, you definitely shouldn't be playing it, because they know they do just enough solid songs to get those in churches to be played. And people go, oh, this is really nice. Let me go check out other songs by Hillsong. And then they check those out and start following Hillsong, and before you know it, you know, they're gone. So that's the danger with it. If it was,
it's a gateway music. It's gateway music.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they weren't so open about the fact that they use it as a gateway drug into their cult, right? then it might be sound different, but they're really clear about that. This is the way they try to pull people in. And therefore, no, you should never play that, even if the songs are good, because that's what they want. I mean, that's why they do solid songs, right? To pull, so that they could be sung in solid churches. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that's what I'd say with that. Matt?
Yeah, I'm with you. In fact, the church I go to, they were playing a lot of that music, and people were leaving over it. And anyway, so they're stopping that.
Yeah,
it gets deeper, and the conversation gets deeper. But
all right, well, yeah. we got a couple minutes left, Ethan. I don't know if you have anything more, but I know that there's someone next coming in here. So,
yeah.
All right, hey, come back if we can continue dialoguing and continue with this. Next week, okay. Or not next week, next week's Thanksgiving, so we won't have a show. So eat turkey next week. All right, let me bring in that we, Matt, I don't know, you might be upset. Let's bring them in. This is a couple, Matt. You ready for this? Here we go. You guys can unmute yourself. Oh.
Oh, no.
Cameron, how you doing?
Hi.
Cameron, Melanie.
How you guys doing? And these are friends of mine, you know.
Wait, Matt, you got to see his T-shirt. We got to get a close-up of his T-shirt there.
What does
his
T-shirt say?
Okay, here. Where's it? You hold it.
It's Trump with 2020 in his sunglasses there saying, I'll be back dressed as the Terminator.
I'll be back, good.
Matt voted for Trump.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
I didn't vote for Trump.
I'm going to get myself in trouble. So, yeah, Cameron.
Melody had a question on Calvinism. Mm-hmm.
Believe it.
Oh, well, Cameron's still working on me. I grew up in an Armenian home, and okay. Even my own mother has talked even with Matt, and he's told her a lot, and she had a hard time, but it was fun.
That's
no.
So I took it easy, too.
Yeah, I've been somewhere in between, but there's one specific point that I just can't wrap my head around.
Okay.
Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. I don't understand.
You know, that's brilliant, Melody, because I was planning, I was actually thinking somehow tonight I wanted to get that in, and you I see. Okay, wait, I got to bring John in, because John, redo what you were just doing. That's really funny. Yeah, huh? So Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. That's what's holding her back.
Okay. I thought it was going to be something really good here, but oh well.
Well, we're going to end up closing out, and after talking about, you know, Jeffrey Epstein,
sorry.
We'll have to wait to see if we're going to get Matt's view of what actually happened to Jeffrey Epstein. Maybe we'll hear that in 2 weeks. So we will not have a show next week, folks, because it's something in America here. What are we doing? We should ask Andrew. Andrew will bring you in from down under. See if you know what holiday. He's probably not even there. His camera's off. What holiday is coming up this Thursday? Do you know? Ah, there you go. See, everyone knows American holidays. Even down in the...
You could always have a turducken on Thanksgiving.
Huh?
You could always have a thing called a turducken on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to have a turducken. Actually, I do have a turducken. So, but yeah, I mean, so we'll have... Oh, Matt dropped out.
You should drop us out. It seems like...
Okay, so Matt dropped out. I'm going to drop you guys out, and we'll end out the show. So no show next week. So please do not show up thinking that there's going to be a show. I do want to give a quick shout out for those who are, if you're listening or watching somewhat live before Thanksgiving. We are still have some, for those who want to go to Israel in 2021, we do have still giving away till the end of November. There's some DVDs and books that are being offered to those who get their down payment in before the end of November. So make sure to do that if you want to join with us. And So that is, go to 2021israeltrip.com, 2021israeltrip.com. There are different prices depending if you're leaving from New York or elsewhere. We just had some folks from Ireland who signed up, so they'll be meeting us in Tel Aviv. You can do that, and if you're crafty with finding good prices for flights, maybe you could save money even out of New York. So with that, I didn't, because we had some technical issues early on, I didn't even introduce us at the beginning of this one, but Matt Slick is with Karm.org. I'm with Striving for Eternity. I'm the host, Andrew Rappaport, and I do want to encourage you to check out all of the podcasts on the Christian podcast community. This is one of, I think, 15 currently, but we have several podcasts. Go check out them out. Go to christianpodcastcommunity.org. We have a new website there. I should say that if you are not getting Apologetics Live, you may have to unsubscribe and resubscribe. We had a little glitch as we moved to the new website, and so some people got caught in that glitch, and what you just have to do is unsubscribe, resubscribe, and you should be set. So with that, we'll catch you next time on Apologetics Live. Remember to strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God, and we will catch you next time.